The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
First, we have Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times, and Sinead Ryan, consumer columnist with the Irish Independent and presenter of The Home Show on News Talk, to address all of the major issues in the news today. Ultimately, we're all working our way up to seagulls, which apparently we are underestimating greatly. They're a wonderful animal and we should be proud to be around them. Before that, though, today is the 6 month anniversary of the Dublin riots.
God, is it?
Yeah. 6 month anniversary of the Dublin riots. And a lot of people asking whether or not much has changed since in relation to provision of Gardaí. What do you think, Sinead? Are we at a point where we're now inundated with police and the place is safe?
I don't think anything has changed, Anton. I was in town that night and while I was down at the Docklands rather than up where all the trouble was, it was fairly frightening because you could hear a lot of it going on and sirens and all that kind of thing. And, you know, it took me hours to get home because all the taxis and buses had been pulled off the streets. It didn't help I was in an evening dress holding a pair of high heels. But anyway, I don't think anything has changed. I did notice, because I'm in and out of town a lot like yourself, for about 3 weeks after the riots, you couldn't go down Grafton Street or O'Connell Street without seeing police vans and lots of Gardaí. No doubt about that. And then they all seemed to dissipate and it went back to normal. I certainly haven't seen any increase in numbers around town. Now, I'm not here, you know, late at night typically, so maybe there is, and I don't want to be unfair about it. But my understanding was that after the riots, Gardaí were pulled from everywhere to support Dublin. In other words, you know, regional, rural areas, they were get up in a bus, come to the Red Cow, we're going to farm you around Dublin to make you visible. So there wasn't the extra capacity to suddenly have hundreds more guards, whether or not they're needed, because you can't keep doing that. You can do that as a show of force. I think the Minister, Helen McAtee, did herself no favours with a very intemperate photograph about a week after the riots of her walking through the city centre, surrounded by guards, saying, it's perfectly safe, I don't know what the problem is. And that kind of went down in meme history. So no, I don't see any difference. I do see a lot of retailers and shopkeepers driven out of business and to their wits' end by the amount of petty theft. Now, that's called petty theft, but like you're talking about hundreds or thousands of euros of stuff, serial offenders. I mean, how irritating is it to read a news report, a court report of somebody, oh, they had 55 previous convictions and they got a suspended, like 6 weeks suspended. I mean, that drives people potty, drives me potty as a Dubliner. So no difference.
Now, there was a sense in advance that there was a sort of the dogs in the street have been barking, that public order generally around Dublin is fairly bleak, that it is not a welcoming place to be, that there was an air of tension indeed about the city. To some extent, you could make an argument that says, well, the show of force worked and we have receded to a better place. Have we, or is there still the same sense of menace and lack of safety around Dublin City that there
was? I don't think you can make a very convincing argument about that. I think that Dublin City Centre, it's quite uneven, to be frank. I mean, there are parts that you walk through and it can feel like an absolutely kind of modern, wealthy European capital, which it is, and very vibrant and lots of people hanging around and good street life and all sorts of interesting things happening. And then you can walk 250 metres down the road and it can change entirely. So I think that, you know, you're right. There was this incredible surge in visible policing afterwards. And that's a policing strategy that goes back to New York in the 80s and Giuliani and the broken window strategy and everything like that. And it did seem to be effective to a point. But as you said, you know, this was very much a temporary strategy that drew on resources elsewhere. And one of the things that Richard Shakespeare, who is the current chief executive of Dublin City Council, you know, we think that politicians hold the power in this country, but like we all know, the likes of the City and County Managers Association and it's the people who staff it, they hold huge power in our cities, and this guy is a very influential, important person, and he's saying that you can't run policing in the city on overtime, and that's effectively what has been happening. That's what a lot of the Garda organisations said in the aftermath of the riots. You know, that this was when you had to make a surge, when you had to make a statement of intent. Of course, you could muster the numbers, and I remember looking at this after the riots. There was this big concern, and it was probably a well-founded one. You know, we just had the most remarkable riots on the streets of the capital, but there was a big concern around Christmas and also safeguarding the livelihood of retailers who are under pressure from a whole lot of other secular trends, online shopping and all the rest of it. And it worked over Christmas, but it has dissipated. And I think
what you're left with is that uneven. I mean, we seem to be setting the bar at, well, there isn't a Lewis currently on fire and nobody's breaking into Arnott's. That's grand.
As in, to
the broken windows theory, the notion of that was that if you clean everything up, now it's obviously there has been a lot of criticism of that theory in subsequent years, but the core of it was this notion that if you stopped evident lawlessness in the city, you created a much more benign environment for everybody and you had the rising tide that lifts all boats. We don't seem to be seeking to do the same here, or are we?
No, and it's a pity that we don't, because, I mean, you will speak to law-abiding people and they will tell you all the time, if I knew there were more guards around that I could see. Now, the Gardaí or politicians may say, well, just because they're on the street, it doesn't make your safety anymore. You know, they're busy in Garda stations solving crimes kind of thing. But that's not the point. That misses the point, which is that if you don't have ordinary people, good people, spending money, law-abiding people in and out of the city centre, using, you know, hospitality, walking through our streets, if they're not willing to come in, then all you're left with is the lawlessness and the people who are. So visible policing is a really, really important part of that. It doesn't matter if they're just walking in pairs up and down and up and down. It's to be seen to be doing it. And that is what matters. And if that's optics, so be it.
It's as old as time, really, isn't it? The concern about, you know, to use the British vernacular, the PC on the plod, you know, and there's a great kind of politics to that as well. And it's interesting, actually, around October last year, around the riots, my colleague Conor Gallagher in the Irish Times was writing about the reported stats on street crime in the capital, and they'd actually gone down. So there's this kind of tension between what people, you know, perceive as the problem, and, you know, let's not, you know, doubt their lived experience of walking the streets and how the stats then portray that. And it's very difficult to solve that from a political point of view, but also from a policing point of view, because with a limited amount of guards, with a limited amount of PCs to put on the plod, and with competing policing priorities across the country, you know, for every person you have on the beat, it's something not being done elsewhere. And you can bet your bottom dollar you'll hear about it.
There has to be an economic consequence to it, though, Jack. I mean, I was coming in the other morning, let's say about 6:45 in the morning, stopped to get a cup of coffee, and there's a, you know, the paddy wagon tour bus. Mm. It is getting filled with American tourists out of a hotel on O'Connell Street. Meanwhile, there are four guys stealing a motorcycle with their hoods up, all on electric scooters, and they all tear off down O'Connell Street, having successfully nicked the bike, not a helmet between them. Now, if you're one of those American tourists, I imagine you think, well, this isn't quite the Irish welcome that I was shooting for.
Yeah, well, I partly work on Talbot Street, which, you know, has its fair share of people doing nefarious things that they shouldn't be doing on the streets. It is probably the only place that I would wander in Dublin where I do not see a regular police presence. And this idea, which we've seen the council doing, which is locking off laneways where drug deals and all this kind of stuff is going on. I mean, what does that say? They're saying we're not even going to bother trying to make it safe. We're just going to say nobody
it's
can go there,
really,
even the people
ways,
who want
it.
It totally is. And, you know, it can't be just down to numbers. It's about attitude. It's about the will. And it's about that presence and that visibility. So, you know, are there some jobs that maybe we could look at getting retired guards back to do that are office-based to free up more people to get out in the beat? Are there jobs that administrative, God knows, there's enough of them in there, you know, answering phones and all that kind of thing. Maybe they could do some work. You know, it doesn't have to be all about recruting thousands of guards in to Temple Moor.
Or the much-vaunted Garda Reserve. Yeah.
Whatever happened to that?
It's still trucking along. And if memory serves, Helen
McEntee.
This
was McDougall's original reason.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Helen McEntee brought some proposals to Cabinet not too long ago. Don't ask me exactly what they were, but I know that they were designed to give a bit of a kick up to the backside of the kind of recruitment of Garda Reserve and to try and get it working. You know, the self-evident corollary of that is that it's not working and you're not getting the numbers in there. But that's exactly the kind of duty you can imagine a Garda Reserve.
Text to say there has been no permanent improvement in city policing and the Justice Minister is very much out of her depth. If you want to get in touch, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents, you can get us on WhatsApp 087 1400 106. Now, if you were listening earlier on to Lunchtime Live, you will have heard the discussion discussion around with Barry Kenny from Irish Rail about the frustration that people are expressing over the proposals to end the Rosslare to Dublin train service. Now, part of the issue with this is, on the one hand, Irish Rail is saying, but look, if we want to run regular enough service, we can't have it interfere with the Dart, therefore we stop it at Greystones. And other people are saying, but you won't attract people to use the service unless it is a direct commuter line that's relatively quick and efficient into Dublin.
Yeah, I think one of the abiding sounds associated with this story today is a screeching of train brakes as people kind of slam this policy into reverse. Because at the moment, and this is true of nearly every transport policy we've seen from this government, you saw it with the demand management, take cars off the streets, reduce car parking. The minute there's a whiff of controversy around this, they'll say this is only, you know, a suite of options. This is modelling, which is one of my favourite things. This is exactly what they're saying about this proposal. It's just modelling. No decisions have been taken. But one of the problems is
ahead
that, like,
of a general election.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they don't want to alienate the voters in the now two Wexford constituencies. But one of the problems is that I think this arises partially from trying to do more with Dart, right? So this is partially to do with upgrading the Dart service and doing Dart Plus and all this stuff, which is probably like a good public policy goal. Improve your, you know, your medium rail infrastructure in and around the capital. That's grand. That's good. But it seems that when you give with one hand, you also have to take away with the other. And that's anathema to politicians and to politics, because they don't like being told, they don't like telling people in any constituency you're going to lose, or it's even going to feel like you're going to lose something. And that's why I think this backlash has been so strong. So if I was to lay a bet on this now, I'd say won't go ahead.
But this is the feel of you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because even if it doesn't go ahead, you're still faced with how do you get enough frequency on that line if it ends up interfering with, not ends up, but it has to compete for relatively small track space between Greystones and the city centre with the Dart, which is of course limiting.
Oh, there's way worse examples than that, Anton. I ended up down a rabbit hole earlier this afternoon looking at the PSO funding rates. They have gone up. So this is the public sector funding, public service funding levy that is given to transport. It's gone up in 5 years from 32% to 53%. So they're getting buckets more money, right? The bus and Lewis and Dart are all up in terms of usage, passenger numbers and income. Irish Rail is down 31% in income and 29% in passenger numbers. They're blaming this on a couple of things. One, because the whole COVID years has turned everybody into hybrid workers now. So they're simply not commuting as much anymore. And also because the other services like the bus have introduced things like the 90-minute fare, integrated tickets. Someday we'll be able to tap our debit card across it, all that kind of thing. So they've chosen to improve some services and not others, but it's part of the build it and they will come kind of thing. When you're looking at subsidies, right, and there's huge subsidies for rail, it's incredibly expensive to run rail lines. And I don't think anybody wants to privatise it the way they've gone down the road in the UK, because it hasn't worked and there's train strikes all over the place. One passenger going on the Dart is subsidised by the government to the tune of 90 cents. Okay.
Per journey, per passenger.
Journey. On the Ballybrophy to Limerick line, the subsidy is €761 per passenger.
That can't be right. 761 euros of a subsidy for one person
Correct.
To travelling.
They carry 73 people a day.
I would happily drive them down myself for that.
But they carry 73 people a day. Now, you see, we're either for that or we're against it.
Well, you sort of have to be for it.
And you have to be for it. And if you're for it, then you have to say, if you're trying to, on one hand, to say everybody should stop driving and try and use public transport, the first lobbies out of the traps are going to be people who live in rural areas saying it's all very well for you above in Dublin with this and you're that and you're this. And so you have to subsidise it. And we have to take a decision then if that's the case as a nation, in the same way we subsidise hospitals and schools, we either have to pay for them entirely as a full state service and do what they did in Luxembourg and parts of Germany and just say, do you know what, just use the thing. I was in Luxembourg like 2 months ago. Everything's free. You just get on the train, you get off the train, you get on the, but now you're not going terribly far in Luxembourg, let it be said, but you're just in and off and in and off. The smoothness, the ease of it, nobody's showing tickets, nobody's fumbling in their purse, none of that. So you either do that or you end up trying to operate it like a commercial organisation. I don't think you can do both.
Interesting text in relation to what we were talking about earlier on with the Gardaí and the policing. Text say, our family did a midweek shopping trip to Dublin about 2 weeks ago with my two teenage girls. All day we were in and out of Jervis, the Ilac, O'Connell Street, Temple Street, Grafton Street. No crime. Never felt uncomfortable. Lovely day out, says Matt. And Matt declares that he is from Galway, just so you can have a comparison of his experience. I live in Dublin city centre. The city isn't as bad as this lawless Mad Max image that people are saying. Yes, there are a few more teenagers in the city centre robbing bikes, and there are a few more homeless addicts shoplifting. But to say the city is dangerous, come on now. It's much safer city than many in Europe and America. Another, it's not that street crime has gone down, it's that it's not reported. My bike was nicked and there was just no point telling the guards, and buckets more coming in along those lines. 53106 or 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. To the issue that I know Jack has been chomping at the bit to get at. We have been mischaracterizing seagulls, Jack. We should be honoring them and welcome them amongst us.
We do them a disservice, apparently. So this is a new push from scientists in the UK who are trying to do a dramatic overhaul, a rebrand of seagulls. They're arguing that seagulls are charismatic and not criminal, and that we need to look at them as this maligned, put upon species. And the science does seem to underpin this exactly to some extent, or to a great extent, really, because they're kind of being forced from their natural habitats. They're being forced into contact with humans. They are doing what any wild animal would do and reacting to an abundance of food on the streets and feeding and multiplying and thriving in urban areas. And we should stand back and admire their resilience and enterprise and originality in thriving.
I would put it to you that charisma does not alleviate our capacity to notice their negative criteria or the negative characteristics. Ted Bundy was very charismatic. He was still a horrendous human being. Seagulls may be charismatic.
The Ted Bundys of the air.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not far off it.
Yeah. Look, I think, look, when you drill down into this, and we were saying this outside, I mean, this is not really a seagull problem. This is a problem with the public realm. You know, this is a problem with not putting in the adequate facilities to take care of large amounts of waste on the streets. You know, I live not too far from the north inner city of Dublin, and there's a problem with refuse collection there. There's a problem with dumping. And you see plastic bags torn asunder by seagulls. And, you know, you could look at it one way and say, you know, aren't these seagulls terrible, mischievous and evil? And maybe we should cull them all. Or you could say, you know, you'd like to cull them all. Let's solve the problem that's at the root of this.
Tell me you want to get the shotgun out, Sinead. I can see it in your eyes.
Well, I am most gratified by the Parks and Wildlife Services, who issued the National Urban Gull Survey recently, which found, and I didn't know this was a job, but you can count gulls apparently as a living, 17,445 pairs of nesting gulls they found. However, They recognised there were difficulties in counting some of the urban gulls, because apparently they get into Dublin and just disappear and attack people. I am minded by a senator who you might recall called Ned O'Sullivan, who stood up in the Dáil in the Senate in 2014 and said that it was only the Dublin seagulls that were losing the run of themselves. And it wasn't a national problem at all, because down in Munster, they were grand and well-behaved. No, Jack's right. This is to do with people. It has nothing to do with gulls. We've stripped away their habitat. We feed them. We allow our kids to go and play with them and give them sandwiches. I remember I was sitting in during COVID in Stephen's Green during one of the lockdowns, and I met my son who was down at Trinity. We sat at opposite ends of the benches with a bought sandwich, and out of nowhere, didn't a gull come down? I didn't even see it.
So it's actually technically your fault, Sinead.
It was gone out of my hand.
Sinead Ryan, consumer columnist of the Irish Independent, Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times. Thank you both very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.